Laudato Jesus Christus. This is the English program of Vatican Radio.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to today's program. I'm Tracy McClure. Thanks for joining me. Coming up over the next half hour, a Vatican message for the end of Ramadan urges Christians and Muslims to be educators of peace and to increase dialogue to foster a society built on respect for all people. How great are the dangers facing our seas and oceans? Church experts call for greater protection of the maritime environment before it's too late. And Caritas Europa works to develop areas of the world where people are forced by war, famine, and economic strife to migrate to other countries, often putting their very lives at risk. In the troubled times we live in, religious believers have a duty to work in favor of peace. That was at the heart of a message to Muslims from the president of the Pontifical Council for Interreligious Dialogue, Cardinal Jean-Louis Touron, marking the end of the Islamic holy period of Ramadan. The message, entitled Christians and Muslims, Call to Promote a Culture of Peace, says it is a duty for religious believers to show respect for the convictions of individuals and communities everywhere through freedom of religious practice, a fundamental human right. We must all be educators of peace, of human rights, and respect of every human being, the message continues. It urges that everyone spread a message of love, a responsibility that falls squarely on the family, on teachers, and religious who educate young people so that they grow up to respect fundamental human, moral, and civic values. Cardinal Touron encouraged the pursuit and intensification of dialogue between Christians and Muslims. Dialogue, he said, is the tool which can help us to escape from the endless spiral of conflict and tensions which mark our societies so that all people can live in serenity and peace and with mutual respect and harmony. He appealed to Muslims to join Christians in encounters and in exchanges so they can work together for peace and for a better future for everyone, thus giving today's young people an example to follow and to imitate. Courageous leader who called for a civilization of love. This is how Pope Benedict XVI recalled his predecessor Pope Paul VI earlier this week. He was speaking at the end of a special concert performed by an international Italian orchestra Thursday at his summer residence in Castel Gandolfo. Emer McCarthy has more.
The Hall of the Swiss in Castel Gandolfo was the setting. The notes of Bach, Mozart and Vivaldi, the evening's musical interlude, while the occasion was the 110th anniversary of the birth of Pope Paul VI.
Significativa è la circostanza che ha motivato questo evento, e cioè il 110th anniversario della nascita del servo di Dio Paolo VI.
In his address to the musicians, civic authorities and bishops present at the concert, Pope Benedict described his predecessor as an illustrious pope who rendered untold service to the Church in difficult times of great social and religious change. Pope Benedict said his evangelical wisdom guided the Church through the Second Vatican Council and in its aftermath, perceiving with prophetic intuition the hopes and fears of the men and women of the time. Paul VI, added the Pope, had a deep love for humanity and its progress. However, underlined Pope Benedict, this did not stop him from highlighting the contradictions, errors and risks of a scientific progress detached from the solid basis of spiritual and ethical values.
Paolo VI è stato prudente e coraggioso
He was prudent and courageous and led the church with an evangelical realism and optimism fed by an inconquerable faith. He launched the call to a civilization of love. I'm Emma McCarthy.
Responding to the environmental challenges of today on the open seas. The task is a huge one if you consider that the Earth's population lives on just 25% of the planet's surface. All the rest is water. The International Maritime Organization marks the 27th of September as World Maritime Day to try to raise awareness about the urgency of protecting the maritime environment. Our very future depends on it. Archbishop Agostino Marchetto is Secretary of the Pontifical Council for the Pastoral Care of Migrants and Itinerants. He says we have to wake up to the fact our planet is fragile and the things we do today can have serious repercussions tomorrow. Everyone must intensify efforts to protect and preserve the maritime environment before it's too late.
Many countries, however, are still reluctant to ratify the existing conventions regarding protection of the maritime environment because this would require, on their part, large financial investments and expertise which they do not always have. Respect for the environment, in any case, presupposes the conviction that we are all God's stewards in the creation, and this calls for a personal, collective, and international commitment. For the Church, taking care of the creation is a moral question, as John Paul II's encyclical Centesimus Annus reminds us.
Australia's National Director of the Apostleship of the Sea, Ted Richardson, is concerned there's too much plundering of fish stocks, too much self-centeredness in consumer demands, the get what you can now and forget about the consequences later mindset.
We don't take care of our environment. We've got a lot of problems, and we're a global planet that's 75% covered by water. And we need to keep that in mind, that if we destroy our marine environment and we have nothing left, the little bit of land we live on cannot sustain the global economy. It cannot sustain our way of living or our lives. There's too little land available for a planet that is really covered by mostly water.
Well, in fact, the theme for this year's World Maritime Day seems to be concentrating on current challenges, but what about preparing for the future challenges? I mean, after all, the experts are saying global warming is expected to increase the size of the oceans and seas, for one thing. And I would imagine that as fresh water becomes more scarce in some areas, more people could be seeking a livelihood on the sea. So what should policymakers be considering when thinking
exactly
of the future?
Yeah, as the world warms up, we're going to have less land, less land to live on. And we have to be very careful on how we utilize these resources. And they are very valuable resources for our future, for our generations to come. The sea can provide us with a good living in the marine environment as far as our sea stocks and our fish and things like this. But again, we've got to be careful on how we harvest them. We can't just go out there and say, let's go and catch every fish we can catch and make a dollar today and not plan for tomorrow. Fish farms also have to look at their future. They can harvest a lot of fish and they can breed them and grow them and send them off to market. But at the same time, Are they doing damage to the environment in the concentrated area? What's happening with the waste products from the fish farming? Where's it all going? What's it happening to the marine environment around them? We've got to look at the global currents, how our currents work. The world conveyor that moves the currents around the world has even changed. It's slowed down. Why is it slowed down? You know, this is something that we need to seriously look at, because that also provides the nutrients that keeps our planet alive. It keeps the fish stocks alive. We need to understand, I think, where we're coming from as a global family and what we're doing. I think we're still living for today and not living for tomorrow.
Unfortunately, globalization has not improved the living and working conditions in the maritime world. Crews spend more and more time on board. They are isolated, stressed, and overworked. This is most obvious in the fishing sector. While it is true that there are millions of responsible fishers who deserve all our respect, we cannot ignore the practice of illegal fishing, the use of destructive methods, especially in Africa, by ships from other continents, and overfishing, which in some regions even risks making fish resources disappear in the near future. I would also mention the all too frequent accidents at sea that also have dramatic consequences for the communities of the accident victims.
There are many different things that we can change, and we've got the ability to change. Whaling has always been a sore point with most Australians, that we tend to allow whaling to take place. We've stopped it. We've ceased whaling in Australia, and many countries around the world have ceased whaling. But you've got Japan, who goes out and harvests their whales for research, in inverted brackets, and other countries now saying, well, if they can do it, why can't we? And pretty soon, all our whale stocks will drop off. We're just starting to recover from what we did early part of this century with whales. And we use the oils and everything from them, the bones and everything. But, you know, we almost decimated the entire whaling population. It's come back. It's healthy at the moment, but it needs to be a lot more healthier, because if we're going to start whaling again, we're going to just take out that beautiful resource. It's going to be abused and used and not left for the future. There's not going to be proper management of our fishing stocks and our environment. And it's not just whales, it's all sorts of fish. There's a lot of fishing going on now down in the South Pole, that boats from South America and things are now going for the different fish down there. And we're policing and chasing them. We're chasing Indonesians out of Australian waters who are taking fish stocks from around Australia. And then sharks is another thing. Killing a shark for its fins? Come on. This is a beautiful creature, and we're destroying them. In some places, there's a lot of sharks that are just about on the edge of extinction because someone wants their fin for a soup. I think this is just poor management. We haven't educated people on what they're doing and the harm they're doing for their future generations.
So what are you looking for then? Are you looking for more policing of the open seas, or a combination then of this education and policing?
Both, yes. You need policing. You need governments to take responsibility for their stocks, for their fish stocks, and they need to have a world focus on what we're doing with our seafarers and with our stocks. How seafarers are being coerced into being fished out or used for fishing out stocks and things like this, fishing platforms, using explosives. These are all educational things we need to do, and also need policing to say, we're not going to do it. We're not going to allow this to happen. And we can't turn a blind eye to it and say, this can continue to happen, because 75% of the world's covered, so we can just keep going and it'll all be there. Well, it's not going to be there. The large areas of the world's waters that can't be inhabited by fish. It's way too deep. It's way too broad. There's no materials around for them to feed off. Most of the fish feed close to the countries, close to the shoreline. And we're out there going for them, left, right and centre. See, whatever you can fill up your boat with today and whatever means you can use to get them. That comes into education. It also comes into policing of the maritime fraternity to say, let's stop this, let's do something more to make these stocks around so that the next generation and the generation after that will have plenty.
Pope Benedict attests that the environmental deterioration makes particularly unsustainable the existence of the Earth's poor. Because of the love for the poor, we are therefore shocked by crews abandoned in foreign ports, unpaid salaries and abuses, which show the risk also for the maritime industry that economic consideration will be put before concern for people's welfare.
Because people are poor, there are those out there ready to exploit them, to get them out working for very cheap wages, to trap the harvest, to catch the fish, to make somebody else rich. We need to have laws to make sure that that doesn't happen, that we can't just do that. We have ample stocks in our world to feed the poor. We have the resources to feed everybody. These are people. These are God's people. They should be given aid. They should be supported. We've got rich countries around the world who have lots to give, but restrict on how much they're going to give. I think we just need to say, come on, everybody deserves a right to a fair life and to a fair living and to a fair dinner. Why should somebody be starving when I can have plenty on my plate? It's not the way God wants us to be. And I think Pope Benedict is correct when he says, you know, we have a lot to share and we should share. We should be stewards of our environment and of our planet and say, you know, everybody is equal in God's eyes. It doesn't matter whether you're poor or rich. You're rich. When you die, what do you take with you? You go in the ground the same as the next person, the poor man beside you. It's irrelevant what you have in this life. It's what you take into the next one that's important, and taking your soul into the next life is the important thing.
Those who live in the industrialized countries have to understand that the Earth's resources cannot be squandered, and that it is necessary for them to use them parsimoniously and in a way that is consistent with the common good and for the sake of the future generations.
I think that's what Pope Benedict is saying. You know, we can't continue the way we are. We need to be stewards of our planet, and we need to take care of everybody.
Well, that's certainly what the Fisher of Men would have said 2,000 years ago, and the message is ever more urgent today so that we safeguard the planet for the generations to come. Thanks there, then, to Ted Richardson, Australia's National Director of the Apostleship of the Sea, and to Archbishop Agostino Marchetto, Secretary of the Pontifical Council for the Pastoral Care of Migrants and Itinerant People, the Vatican's office that deals with maritime ministry. And if Christ invited his apostles to be fishers of men, what to say then about an episode at sea last spring? You might remember seeing a snapshot in your newspaper or the image on your television screen of a fishing trawler towing a net. But instead of carrying fish, 27 migrants were hanging on for their lives. They'd been abandoned by people traffickers when their wooden boat began to sink. But the trawler's captain refused to take them on board. They might have spoiled his catch of fish. They were finally rescued by the Italian Navy. This disturbing story was just one of many such real-life tragedies discussed at a recent forum on migration and development organized by Caritas Europa. I spoke to the Brussels-based head of the Migrants Office, Peter Verhager, who told me he was excited about the prospect of international Caritas partners being able to coordinate their activities more effectively, and help change the course of such ships of despair into ones of hope.
We had a very good representation of all regions worldwide except Oceania, which gave very good input to the forum, which opened the discussion and the typical European discussion we have on migration and immigration to the European Union. Because so many people working in migration in Europe have discovered that we do not only have immigration to the European Union, but there's a lot more going on with the same problems and the same debate in other regions of the world. This brought us to a good understanding why we should work together, not only on the European level, but worldwide, on the global level, within the Caritas Federation and with partner organizations on both issues of development and migration. And that both can reinforce each other if actions in both fields are well coordinated.
The focus of this particular forum was on development, that is, finding ways to make life easier for people in their own country so they don't feel pressured into feeling the need that they have to leave their country and go somewhere else to live.
Yes, well, that was one of the two main aspects. And so the one aspect is, well, Caritas organizations combat poverty, which includes, of course, development projects, but also poverty of migrants who were forced to migrate and who live in deplorable conditions and working conditions, exploitation, victims of trafficking, and so on, elsewhere in the world. In fact, development workers and migration experts so that they're basically working on exactly the same problem, the same challenges of combating poverty. We do not want to prevent migration because we see that that's proven by all kinds of studies as well and reports that migration contributes to the development of the countries who invite migrants. And I say invite because that's exactly how the contribution of migrants to as well the countries of destination as their countries of origin can be promoted. Because if migrants are welcome and have rights in the countries where they come to, they can more easily contribute to the development of the society they live in and as well as their society and communities of origin.
Recently, I went to a soup kitchen here in Rome run by a Catholic lay association. I was really surprised to learn that most of the people that they receive every day, besides the elderly, retired people, for example, who live in Rome and so on, but they also receive a big number of Eastern Europeans. And the woman who was showing me around said, you know, just a few years ago, before Europe widened its borders, that they were seeing a lot more Africans and Asians. But now the focus is on Eastern Europeans. Does this mean that we're not seeing the influx anymore of the Africans and Asians?
Well, I must say that the landscape has changed indeed because in the first place, since the early 90s, we have seen a considerable drop of number of asylum seekers, so people seeking international protection in the European Union. Although the last 6 months figures of UNHCR show an increase again of the trend, mainly because of an increase of asylum applications from people from Iraq. But concerning migration, we have indeed seen an increase of labor migration from mainly Eastern European countries. For example, there are considerable communities of Ukrainian workers in Portugal, in Italy as well, Moldova, and other non-EU member states, but bordering states. The same in Ireland, for example, which is currently has an economic growth and which needs labor migrants and which also invites labor migrants actively, so which has an active recruitment policy. As I said, discussion was how can we reduce poverty or combat poverty to avoid that people are forced to migrate, to leave their country, not only for political reasons, but also to survive. What one of the participants said from Senegal, for example, that many people leaving Senegal or through Senegal can maybe not be considered as refugees in the sense of the UN Convention, but they do leave their country to survive. So not to have a better life, but just merely to survive. So this puts pressure, of course, on us and on policymakers to prevent that people are forced to migrate in huge numbers. One of the conclusions at the forum was that as development people work on poverty reduction and the migration people try to alleviate the poverty situation of migrants here in Europe, that the Millennium Development Goals, for example, are a crucial element. We know the enthusiasm worldwide has a bit reduced and everybody is thinking that we cannot achieve them by 2015 as foreseen. But we do think that everybody stay committed to it, and together with civil society and Caritas organizations, there is a possibility still to reach the Millennium Development Goals. There is, however, not a direct link between increased development in a country and the reduction of immigration from that country. And there are another set of elements play a role, like, okay, you have more access to education, for example, which is one of the Millennium Development Goals. So more people have the opportunity to study and also higher education. But if you have no jobs for these people, they will continue to leave the country. Or if you don't have decent jobs for these people in their own country, they will also leave the region, especially because there is a need on the labor market elsewhere. The European Union, the Middle East, North America, and other regions where highly skilled people are needed and are to be recruited from other regions because they're not available on the local labor market. So there is, on the one hand, the situation in the countries of origin, and on the other hand, the situation in well, let's say, regions of destination where there is an increasing need on the labor market.
So what are the other conclusions then of this forum? What did the participants say that they'd like to see the policymakers do?
So it is clear that a comprehensive or holistic or however you want to call it, but most of all participatory approach is needed to undertake all aspects of the phenomenon. Patrick Torrent, for example, who of the International Labour Organization, said it very clearly that such an approach must be founded upon the human values embodied in international human rights and labour standards, and only these standards, on a legal basis, in the international instruments, provide for accountability to the human dignity, development, and social welfare that Caritas promotes for all people. So, which means that you need these international instruments, and they need to be applied as well. And countries have to be made accountable for their acts. For example, a participant from Sri Lanka mentioned that a country like Sri Lanka has signed and ratified almost all international instruments, but it remains a paper commitment. So that's one of the things we have to work on, and which puts a pressure on us, of course, to increase our advocacy work at the international level for a more global respect for the international agreed instruments.
Peter Verhager is head of the Migrants Office of Caritas Europa. And that concludes today's program. Thanks for listening. I'm Tracy McClure.
You've been listening to the English program of Vatican Radio. Laudato Jesus Christus.